these next few days, we're going to be passing, hopefully passing, trying to pass, the omnibus finance bills. We're going to start with Senator Vickerman and Senate File 1779. Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate File 1779 is Agriculture and Veterans Budget Bill. This bill represents a bipartisan authorship in that it is built from individual bills authored by many legislators. And I'll strike the highlights, and then we have the fiscal expert who will go through the rest of part of it. But the budget meets two major objectives. It meets our fiscal responsibility by reducing state spending by $12 million, and it reflects our funding priorities by increasing state investments in programs serving our veterans and National Guard. This budget, I made a 7% reduction in spending to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the Animal Health, the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute, and to the ethanol division payments. Important part of the bill is members, that the program received an increase. We increased $500,000 for the Veterans Homeless Prevention Program, $1.5 million for National Guard Tuition Program. We put $1 million in for the Veterans Diagnostic Lab. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Dan to go through it, and then if any questions, we can I have some answers. So.
Okay, Mr. Mueller.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I've been informed I have to move the division report.
I'm sorry. Good point. Senator Vickerman. Moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll be working off two different spreadsheets. One's a general fund summary that looks like this. It's just a one-pager. We'll work off that one first. That's just kind of some overall cuts and additions that are in the bill. And there's a correction to it, too, that the sharp eyes of Mr. Watson found earlier this morning that we'll correct. The first area, the Department of Ag, has a general fund base in fiscal year 2010 and 11 of $79.5 million. This bill contains about $3.4 million of ongoing reductions, which is about a 4.3% reduction. There's a one-time ethanol reduction of $2.248 million. And when you add those two reductions together, it's a 7.2% reduction. Then there's some additional spending items. Most of it is one time, and we'll go through that when I go through the other spreadsheet, of $1.33 million. So the net effect, and that's where the summary, the total there is wrong, on the 2.112 reduction actually should be a 4.36 reduction for a total reduction to the Department of Ag of 5.5%. Animal Health Board, they have a base of $10.8 million. There's a 7% cut, permanent cut to them of $758,000, and then we add back $200,000 per year for bovine TB operations. So their net reduction is a 3.3% cut after we add back the bovine TB. The AURI has a base of $6.2 million. A 7% cut to them is a $434,000 reduction. I want to note on this one, the governor had a 50% reduction to AURI. So that is a 7% cut. Now I get down to military affairs. They have a base of $39.1 million. There are no reductions to military affairs. And there's some one-time spending. So their actual net increase of 3.9% to the general fund. Veteran Affairs has a general fund base of $39.6 million. There's no reductions to the Veterans Affairs. And there's some one addition of $250,000 per year for the homeless program through Veterans Affairs. So their net increase is 1.3%. Then the other big change in this bill is a change to the funding, the way we pay out the GI Bill. Currently, it's a direct appropriation of $6 million per year. The actual use of the bill has been much less than that, somewhere on average of $1 million or so a year. And this bill changes it to an open appropriation, meaning that finance will pay the actual cost of the program instead of us trying to estimate what it should be and appropriate that amount. And by doing that, there's a savings to the general fund of $9.1 million. So you get down to the end to meet our 7% cut of $12.2 million. There are $6.8 million of reductions, $3.7 $5 million of new spending, and then the $9.1 million savings of switching the GI Bill to an open appropriation.
Mr. Chairman. Oh, I'm sorry. Ben.
I can answer questions.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Yeah, as long as we're on the GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think about having an open appropriation, but with an open appropriation with a cap? I don't know if that's possible, but it does make me a little nervous. We don't have any open appropriations of the state grant, for example. You know, if we run out of money, we need a deficiency payment, or we have to prorate for students.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, yes, I thought about that, but right now, when the current base of the program is $6 million and the actual use of the program is, you know, only $1 or $2 million, it certainly could be appropriate. I mean, if something happened, like if the federal government greatly reduced the amount of money they're putting into the program or something like that.
Then we go back and revisit that.
A capped appropriation. But I think for this, at least next biennium, I don't think there's any worries that we'll go anywhere near that $6 million that was originally planned for the program.
But now you're just budgeting the actual dollars,
right,
1.3 or something.
The way the open, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, the way the open appropriation works, every time we get a new forecast, we'll figure out just exactly how much money is needed for the program, and finance will pay that amount.
And finance was okay with us? we'll find out.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, I haven't heard from them on this. So.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Vickerman are or Mr. Mueller, when you look at the 12 and 13 years, what does the reduction amount to? You have a 7% for the next biennium. How does that? What happens to that appropriation in the out years?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, maybe I can go through my second spreadsheet that has the tails also. And yes, our target cut for the tails is also 7%, and we meet that both by the GI Bill change and by other ongoing cuts in the bill. So I'll go through the second spreadsheet now. It's a two-sided one, and this covers all funds. And it goes into a little bit more detail about the change items. The columns we should look at are the Senate budget, fiscal year 2010-2011. That's sort of right in the middle of the page. And I'll go through the change item very quickly. The first one on line 14, there was a governor's proposed cut to plant surveys. That is not in the Senate bill. Line 15, there's a little bit of additional spending for wolf and elk damage compensation. That was the governor's proposal. Line 16 is an extra $50,000 to the Department of Ag to help administer the noxious weed law changes that are in the bill. That's from the Senator Kubley bill. The next, let me see, from lines 17 down to 21 are all reductions that were in the governor's bill, just to some specific programs. Line 25 is the St. Paul Growers Association grant for $25,000. This is a one-time grant to help compensate 26. Some of the people who are at St. Paul Growers Association who had some hail. Who this helps give them rebates on their association fees and their lease costs to help compensate some of the damages that happened from a large hailstorm last year. Line number 24 is a Senate additional cut to Department of Ag of $450,000 per year to the marketing and development part of the agency. That was not in the governor's bill. Then we have down on line 27, there's a one-time fiscal year 2011 ethanol payment reduction of $2.248 million. Now, this reduction is just a one-time. It doesn't affect the tails at all. And we'll, the effect of this would be to delay some of the deficiency payments to some of the ethanol plants from 2011 to 2012. Remember, the base of the ethanol payments is about $15.1 million each fiscal year. So this would just reduce that $15 million down to $13.8 or something like that in fiscal year 2011. And we'll just, the effect of this will be is delaying some of the deficiency payments that the ethanol, some of the ethanol companies are getting due to a previous cut that happened in an earlier biennium.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Erickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mueller, as long as we're talking about the ethanol program, how much longer will those ethanol payments run? I know they were limited, I think it was to 10 years. Could you just give us a brief explanation of how long they're going to run and how quickly those payments fall off?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, yes, the, we'll be done doing all the current payments and all deficiency payments in 2012.
Thank you.
And as you probably know, like, no, the, there's not any new companies that are getting money. We're pretty much phasing out the current ethanol payments this year and next year, and after that, it'll be all deficiency payments through to 2012.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Chairman, Senator Rickerman, on the prior line of the marketing and development reduction, what does that amount to in relation to the whole? I assume it isn't eliminating the whole function, it's just a reduction. Could you give me some idea of
Mr. Chairman, what that Senator means? Olson, if I recall correctly, there's a large general fund base to that part of the agency, and I believe it's about a 7% or so reduction to that just narrow portion of the agency.
Thank you.
Down to line 28, there's a $300,000 per year reduction to the dairy development program. The governor had a $500,000 reduction. The base of this program is just over $1 million, so there's still $700,000 for the dairy development program. The next line, 29, the administrative reduction of $350,000. The governor had a $50,000 reduction to the Department of Ag's administration. And then the next four items are some Senate initiatives. Line 30 is the Turf Seed Council. There's a Senator Stumpf bill. And that's a $50,000 per year grant. Line 31 is a $30,000 for a report to help develop a Star Farms organization for Senator Chaudhry proposal. Line 32, there's some language in the bill for a Feeding Minnesota Task Force, a Senator Vickerman proposal, and this $25,000 is the cost for the Department of Ag to help administer that task force. And the last item for the Department of Ag is a one-time $1 million appropriation to the Veterinarian Diagnostic Lab. This money actually goes to the University of Minnesota to help keep that lab certified for the national certification. Apparently there's a shortfall in the operations of that lab, or that they would have to charge some increased fees to help keep that lab certified, and this helps offset that cost. But it's only a one-time appropriation, and this came from a Senator Dill bill. Down, then there's some small changes to the Ag Fund. Well, the net changes to the General Fund, again, are $4.36 million to the Department of Ag. Compared to the governor had about $1.6 million reductions to the Department of Ag. Down to the Ag Fund, there's some small changes. There's a little bit of increased spending, statutory spending, to the Ag Chemical Response Unit of $271,000. There's an increased spending of $37,000 on line 39 for the dairy and food inspection, and there's a fee that is tied to that. So there's a net increase of the Ag Fund of $616,000. As compared to the governor had some big increase in fees for the pesticide program that would increase the spending of that program by about $4.3 million if you look on the governor's budget on line 40. And that is tied to a big fee increase that the governor had in his bill that is not in this bill. The other item that is in this bill right now is some appropriations from the Clean Water Fund. And these are mostly the line 44 is the governor's recommendations from the Clean Water Fund of $8.9 million. And then there is another amendment put on in the bill from Senator Chaudhary that added another $1 million for the Livestock Environmental Quality Program. So there's a total of $9.9 million of Clean Water Fund appropriations in this bill. Including the clean water money, the subtotal of all the changes in this bill to the Department of Ag is $6.18 million, including all funds. And again, the general fund portion is a $4.36 million reduction. And I want to note that one other thing, and maybe when Mr. Knopf goes through the bill later, there's a Rural Finance Authority bonding number that we're carrying in this bill also of $35 million. You'll see that down on line 60. Makes this a bonding bill. Mr. Knopf, as he's going through the bill, we'll talk about that. So that's it for the Department of Ag. Second page, or on the other page, Animal Health Board. Again, most of these reductions on line 67 through 69 were in the governor's bill. However, we took a smaller reduction than the governor on line 69. This keeps it at the 7% overall reduction to the agency before we add back the $200 per year for the bovine TB program. So that's a net general fund reduction to the Animal Health Board of $358,000, which is a little bit less than what the governor had for a reduction. Then we get on to the Ag Utilization Research Institute. And again, the Senate has a $434,000 reduction. That's 7%. The governor had a $3.1 million reduction, which was 50%. Military Affairs. Again, there's no reductions to Military Affairs. The governor had in his supplemental budget an additional $1.5 million to Military Affairs to sort of plug a projected shortfall in their tuition reimbursement program. The Senate covered the first year of that projected shortfall with some just one-time money of $1.5 million. And then there is an additional $20,000 Senate initiative here for a morale support program of $20,000. That's from a Senator Ingebrigtsen bill. So for Military Affairs, is the net increase in their appropriations of $1.52 million. Get down to Veteran Affairs. Again, there are no reductions to any of the programs for Veteran Affairs. There's a $250,000 additional added to the base for the MACV program, which is the program that Veteran Affairs operates for homeless. Currently, the MACV is getting $1 million in the current fiscal year, but that amount is going to drop down to $250,000 in fiscal year 2010, just because we gave them a bunch of one-time money in the current biennium. So this would double their what's currently in the base for them right now, so bring them up to $500,000. And then the next two lines, 104 and 105, are just the change items.
Sarah Olson.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Real, what is MACV?
It's the, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, it's the program that Veteran Affairs operates for.
What's it state? What's the acronym?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, if I remember, sorry, Minnesota
Association
of
Concerned Veterans.
Concerned Veterans. Minnesota Association of Concerned Veterans.
Concerned Veterans, okay.
Yeah, and it's the program that they operate for homeless veterans.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, continuing on, lines 104 and 105 are basically the change items that capture the moving of the GI Bill from a direct appropriation to an open appropriation. Like I said before, the direct appropriation in the base used to be $6 million. We're leaving $100,000 as part of the direct appropriation would be the administrative cost that would be transferred over to HESO to help run
Office of Higher Education.
Office of Higher Education. And then the $1.268 million on line 105 and $1.394 million are the estimated open appropriation that it'll take to cover the cost of the program. The last item, the governor also had some technology upgrades in his budget of $980,000 per year for Veterans Affairs, and that is not in this bill. The last item, there's a provision in the bill, and we have a technical amendment that we'll have to offer in a little bit too. It's a Gold Star license plate. This was an amendment added to the bill and would allow issuance of a special Gold Star license plate, and when we walk that part of the bill, we can talk about that. But there's a small cost that we're carrying here on the bill that's a revenue and a cost item of $2,000 per year, and this will actually be a cost borne by public safety, I believe, for issuing and then collecting a fee for the plate.
And Mr. Mueller, line 102, the information upgrade, how does that the governor appropriated money and it's proposed that we don't. How does that intersect with Senator Betzold's, not his bill, but proposals in, through state departments for information upgrades?
Mr. Chairman, this request was largely tied to when we combined the vets homes and the veteran affairs. My recollection of the request is this technology upgrade is mostly for dealing with the vets' homes and their communications with vets' affairs. There's some incompatible systems and such. So they have requested some money to upgrade their overall technology systems, but a lot of this is tied to...
Mr. Chair, that have to be very careful with the data preference that we have now so that information can't just be everywhere. So that's why this equipment is... I think it's important. It'll run out of Minneapolis to all the other vets' homes, but high technology is here.
Nobody's getting any technology.
I'm not sure anybody can answer my question to the extent that Mr. Mossman and I were just talking about this. And that's why we're not doing everything through the IT office. And I don't think Senator Vickerman, you or Mr. Knopf, Mr. Mueller can answer that. But putting aside what we do or we don't do, we've had significant IT proposals, and usually they've come through the IT office or predecessor offices through admin. And so I'm a little bit surprised to see this request to the governor kind of by itself. So I'm not sure anybody has an answer to that. So it's more of a comment and would suggest a reason not to necessarily make the appropriation, since we'll have Senator Betzel expect some further discussions about IT upgrades, security systems, and so on with your bill, your conference committee, in discussions with the governor. So I think the inability to answer that is my answer, that the question's best placed to people who aren't here. So, sorry, Mr. Mueller, just go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, again, that pretty much gets us through the spreadsheet. Summary on the bottom of the page two shows us there's the net effect of all these changes to the general fund is a $12.2 million reduction. And when you include all funds, including the Clean Water Fund appropriations that are currently in the bill, if you look on line 122, there's a $1.726 million reduction to all the agencies in the bill when you include all funds.
Okay. No. Any discussions on the spreadsheet? Senator Vickerman, did you want Mr. Knopf to go through the language?
Mr. Chairman, I can go through the first two articles, the agriculture appropriations. The first page is basically the boilerplate language and the summary of the amount of money that Mr. Mueller went through in the spreadsheet. I'll just go through quickly some of the riders that are in here. If you look on page two, The first rider is a base appropriation from the remediation fund that's dealing with the ag chemicals that are that would be otherwise eligible for Superfund. Then you got a couple of clean water riders in the bottom of page two, dealing with the clean water fund. These were all part of governor's recommendations. Same with the first one on the top of page three is a clean water fund. The next one, that was the one Mr. Mueller mentioned. That was an amendment by Senator Chaudhry dealing with the Livestock Environmental Quality Assurance Program, again, Clean Water Fund. And then on the bottom of page three, you have the livestock, or the compensation for livestock and crop damage. And this was Senator Stumpf had a bill in on this that basically increases the amount, but then also sets aside the amounts for both crop and caused by crop damage caused by elk and for livestock destroyed by gray wolves. And that that basically is the language as it was amended in committee to Senator Stump's bill. And
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, the Clean Water Fund you referenced, that's the money from the sales tax, the constitutional amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, yes.
Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chairman and members, on the top of page four, you'll see a rider there. For the noxious weed law changes, there's a $50,000. Senator Kubley has a bill in, and you'll see later on in here there are a number of sections of the bill from Senate File 1410 dealing with changes to the noxious weed law. There was a task force recommendations, and this is based on the fiscal note for that bill. And then you'll see starting at 4.12, another base rider dealing with the Minnesota Grown account. Again, on the bottom of page four, another base rider. This deals with the sustainable agriculture grant. And then on page five, you see that starting on 5.7, that's another one, appropriations from the Clean Water Fund. That was, again, a recommendation of the governor. Then on starting on 5.18, you'll see another base rider. This is the training on technical assistance to county and town officials relating to livestock sighting issues. Again, it's a base amount that we carry in this bill. And then on the top of page six, you'll see another base rider on organic certification. These are the grants for people who are becoming certified to become organic growers. On the bottom of page six, Mr. Mueller mentioned Senator Moy had the bill in for the St. Paul Growers Association for people who had their crops destroyed last summer from a hailstorm. That's from Senate File 2047 as amended by committee. And then on page seven, these are the bioenergy and value-added agriculture. This is basically ethanol right now. But you'll see the one thing, this is a base rider, except on 7.6 to 7.7, that's the language that basically says that the reduction in the second year is a one-time reduction. And then on the bottom of page seven, you've got a base rider on the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program. Mr. Mueller talked about the money on that, the $300,000 per year reduction. On page eight, you've got some base riders. The Northern Crops Institute, all the riders on page eight are base riders for various programs, including the payments for county fairs and the Ag Education Leadership Council and livestock breeders. And then on page nine, the rider on 9.3 is a base rider. The rider on 9.6, again, is a base rider, the Turf Seed Council. The rider on 9.14 to 9.29, that was Senator Stumpf had a bill, Senate File 448, and this is basically, as it was amended in committee, the $50,000 per year for their bioenergy part of it. And so it's a little different from the other Turf Seed Council grant. On the bottom of page 9.30, that's a base rider on the Second Harvest, the milk program for them. And then on page 10, the base rider for the mental health counseling for farm families. That's a base rider on 10.25 to 10.32. And then 10.33 to 10.35, that's a base rider for the grant to the Horticulture Society. On the top of page 11, that's the rider for the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory. That was from Senator Dill's Senate File 754. Mr. Mueller talked about that money. On 11.7 to 11.17, That's the money to provide for a Star Farms development program. Senator Chaudhry had Senate File 1694, which actually created a Star Farms board and Star Farms proposal. But what this does is it basically provides money to put together a proposal for a Star Farms program. And then 11.18 to 11.21, that's the Minnesota Feeding or the Feeding Minnesota Task Force. That was from Senator Vickerman's bill, Senate File 1507. And that was based on the fiscal note for that to run that task force. And then on 11.22, we've got the Board of Animal Health, and all of the riders on the Board of Animal Health are base riders. You've got the bovine TB eradication, the Yoni's disease, the avian pneumovirus on the bottom of page 11. And then on the top of page 12, again, we have the base rider for the Cervidae Inspection Program on 12.8. And then the AURI on 12.12 through 12.7, that's all. That's the base rider you see below the title there. And I'll go through the statutory sections. The Section 6 and Section 7 are technical amendments recommended by the administration. It has to do with the increase in money going for livestock damage from wolves and gray wolves and for the crop compensation for elk damage. And all it does is, because the appropriation is being increased, that language needed to be changed to reflect that. And same with Section 7. Section 8 was a recommendation of the administration on reporting on their contract revenue. Section 9, this was an amendment. Senator Torres-Ray was not a member of the committee, but Senator Erickson Ropes moved this amendment for her. If you look on page 14, these are the duties of the Commissioner of Agriculture for Sustainable Agriculture. And what it does is the new number 8 tells the commissioner also to work with local governments and others to strengthen that connection between farmers practicing sustainable farming methods and consumers, and that including local farmers markets and community-supported agriculture.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep, Senator
Olson. On that point, I raised the issue earlier about what it meant, that reduction for marketing and promotion, and now we're adding another assignment that seems to fall into that category. How does that reconcile? Because that you're trying to, there's obviously got to be a cost or a staff responsibility for communicating and connecting categories of people to in promoting the sustainable ag, and yet we're taking a pretty good chunk out of that that specific aspect of the department.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the department does some of this already. This is more to kind of recognize that and to make sure it's part of the report on some of the activities that they've done in this area, and to ensure that they continue to do this. But yeah, I can't answer whether the money is there to do this and to continue all the other functions, or will this rise to a higher level of other things? But it does reflect. Senator Torres-Ray's concern was we want to make sure we recognize this effort. And then on page 15, section 10, that was from Senator Dill's bill. This is the Shared Savings Loan Program. What it does is it increases the loan levels that people can apply for. It basically from $25,000 to $40,000 for an individual applying, and then if there are four or more individuals, it goes up to $160,000. And then starting with section 11, we've got a number of sections here that all deal with the noxious weed law. And there was a task force of people who administer this law and others to basically update the law to reflect kind of more current thinking on how the noxious weed program should work. And those are all contained, section 11, 12, 13, 14, all of page 16. I don't know how much, if you want me to go over in detail on how this program works. I assume you probably don't in this committee.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering about subdivision 19. And one, it talks, let's see, section, I'm not even sure. It's on page 19, subdivision 19. Relating to state and federal lands. Anyway, part of this talks about the responsibility that private landowners have and who pays and how the local weed inspector can enforce the law. One of the problems in northern Minnesota relates to public lands. And when noxious weeds are uncontrolled on public lands, it says that basically the commissioner shall inform and direct the state and federal agencies regarding their responsibilities to manage and control noxious weeds. But is there any other enforcement besides notifying them if they just don't do anything to control the noxious weeds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, yeah, they can enforce, but they have to get the Commissioner of Agriculture has to approve of that. So they basically have to, if a county or a local weed inspector wants to enforce against state lands, they can do it, but it has to be approved by the Commissioner of Agriculture before that can go forward.
And if the Commissioner of Agriculture approves it, and the Commissioner of DNR says no, you know, we're not going to pay for it, what happens?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, the state is liable for that. If they go ahead and make that improvement, if the county or local weed inspector take care of the weeds, they can assess the state. The state is required to pay that. But if you look on page 24.17 to 24.18, where it says that sentence, it says each claim for control or eradication of noxious weeds on public lands must first be approved by the Commissioner of Agriculture. So if the Commissioner of Agriculture approves of it, then this law does apply to the state.
So, Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
Sarah Olson.
Is anything here going to improve that around the metro area? The worst infestations of Canadian thistle are on highway right-of-ways, on edges of parkland, and there, you know, you watch them go to seed and blow all over, and I don't see anything being done at all. What is anything going to assure that something does happen?
Well, I Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I think the sentence that Senator Stump was talking about. I mean, now it will be the duty of the Commissioner of Agriculture to inform those state and federal agencies that it is their duty to do this. I think they, some of them have to kind of assume that these laws don't apply to them, but they do.
So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know, is anybody researching whether we can harvest this and turn it into fuel or something or energy so that it's of value? Somebody ought to figure out something before we're totally taken over by them.
Not that I know. So, Mr. Chairman, we can continue. Again, there's just a number of changes to the noxious weed law. I don't think we need to go over in detail. This was vetted by the policy committees on agriculture, environment, natural resources, and in state and local government. It goes all the way through. Let's see, page 25, 26. There are a number of changes to the noxious weed law. And then you do have an account created in section 38 on page 26. There's no money in the account, but it's basically putting an account in place so that if there was money available in the future for the grant program, you can see on 26.30 to provide grants for noxious weed and invasive plant species assistance to local governments. Again, there's no money in it right now. This kind of sets up the account and the grant program in case there's money available in the future to do this sort of thing at the state level. But right now, it's basically a local responsibility for the noxious weed law. And then on section 40 on page 28, that's the advisory committee membership, and that's the reason for the fiscal note on this. It's because of that advisory committee. It does have this again just creates the committee to advise the commissioner on this, and you will see on page 29 that it expires in 2013. Then on section 41, we have the agricultural pests. We have some definitional changes there, and these were recommended by the administration to have a definition for agricultural pesticide where there's a worker protection requirement. That generally, the EPA only puts worker protection requirements on agricultural pesticides. And then a non-agricultural pesticide, you can see in Section 43, would be one that does not bear a worker protection requirement. And then there's a slight change to distribute to clarify that when it's being offered for sale or delivered into the state, that is included in the definition of distributed. This is for the pesticide law. These are recommended by the administration. Section 44, this is from Senator Vickerman, Senate File 559, and what it does is two things there. If you look on the top of page 30, right now it says a commissioner may not limit the type and quantity of waste pesticides. This is the waste pesticide program. Cannot limit that and cannot assess it, but this would allow the commissioner to limit the type and quantity of waste pesticides accepted and to allow certain assessments for pesticide end users for the collection of the waste pesticides. Section 45 allows more. Again, this was Senator Vickerman's Senate File 554, although it was amended by the division in this document. And what this does is it does two things. One, it gives the commissioner more flexibility in pesticide collections. Rather than every year in every county, this would allow the commissioner to periodically make those collections, but not necessarily every year in every county. And then the bottom of on paragraph C there, it also kind of clarifies what information is required. It gives a little more flexibility on the type of information that needs to be reported when waste pesticides are collected. Section 46 is a pesticide application on railroad property. Senator Erickson Ropes had a bill, Senate File 691. This was significantly amended, though, by the committee, and that's what's included here. It basically requires the safety information to be provided. The commissioner must work with the railroad companies to provide that, and then the common carrier must provide annual pesticide safety training opportunities for their workers. It also, in Subdivision 3, it clarifies some of the pesticide application restrictions that are basically prohibited for those railroads. And then in Subdivision 4, we've got a misuse reporting, basically. And misuse is defined in the bottom there. It basically is if it violates Subdivision 3, which are the specific ones that are included here, or any provision of 18B.07, those are the general prohibitions on where you can spray and how you can spray or apply pesticides. Section 47, again, this was from Senator Vickerman, Senate File 566. We're changing the dates on the when the fertilizer fees are reported. It's basically going to be a calendar year on how those are on the reports and the fees, and so you'll see there are a number of changes. And also Section 48 was from Senator Rickerman's bill, and you'll see there that basically it's going to be the fees are going to be collected on a calendar year basis, or at least the reports are going to be on a calendar year basis, but the inspection fee is also going to be paid by the person who distributes by a license who distributes fertilizer solely for custom application. So you see that you've got various types of groups of people depending on what type of fertilizer it is, but it changes the basic fee down to the person who sells it now, to the end user. And then and that's all through section that through page 32, including the through 32.29. And then you've got on section 49, you have the fee for late application. That is just basically technical language on how that fee works. Then the late fee on section 50, or the inspection fee. This is where it basically tells you that it's a person who registers and distributes the specialty fertilizer and soil plan amendments pays the inspection fee, but a person licensed under 18C-415 who distributes pays the fee. So it depends on which part of the market you're in, who pays the fee, but it is going to be collected on all fertilizers in the state. Section 51, this deals with the ACRA fund, the Agricultural Chemical Response and Reimbursement account. And what this would do is allow the commissioner to use that fund to pay for the commissioner's incident response program related to ACRA eligible sites, so that and that's Mr. Mueller went through that in the spreadsheet. It's non-general fund. It's basically the surcharges on ag chemicals in the state.
Mr. Chair.
That pay for this.
Senator Roblin.
I was just going to ask about this change from the distributor reporting the statement to the registrant or licensee. Isn't that going to result in a lot of extra reports? I mean, instead of like having a co-op send in a report on how much fertilizer was purchased through them and where maybe even where it went, you're going to have each person who applies.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Robien, as my understanding is that the co-op would be now paying the fee rather than the person who distributes it to the cooperative.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, it's not the farmer,
right.
It's the co-op.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Robien, yes. And so, Mr. Chairman, it's on page 34, you've got section 52, and these are, Mr. Mueller mentioned a little bit of revenue that's going to be coming in based on a reinspection fee. They're increasing the this was recommended by the administration. This is for the food handlers, basically a doubling of the reinspection fee, and then also a slight increase to a subsequent reinspection on line 34.11.
Mr. Chairman, just a minute. I just want to make sure that Mr. Chairman notices that those are fees.
Don't talk to me. There are others you can talk to.
Private joke. Sorry, everybody.
And
yeah, right.
Mr. Chairman and members, Section 53, this is, again, Senator Vickerman's bill, was, Senate File 1507. This is the Feeding Minnesota Task Force that was heard by the Ag Committee and in the state and local government. And that, you'll see that basically who's on that committee, the membership, and their purpose, maximize consumption of Minnesota-grown produce and livestock. And then on 35.10, you can see that task force expires in 2 years. Section 54 is a grading inspection fee. This, again, was recommended by the administration. Difference here, though, is what the Senate chose to do on 35.21 to 35.22 is to have a fee that varies based on the number of cows. So if you have fewer than 100, the fee on 35.19 is increasing from $45 to $60 for those with less than 100 cows and from $45 to $150 for reinspection. If you have more than 100 cows, I think the administration was looking at going from $45 to $100 there. What the Senate chose to do was to split it between based on the size level of the producer. Section 55, what this does is eliminates the reporting or disclosure requirements for ethanol producers. Again, that program is basically sunsetting over the next couple of years. And this was a recommendation of the administration to eliminate that disclosure statement because after June 30th, 2010, there won't be any new production that that'll be part of the ethanol program. It'll be all deficiency payments after that. And Mr. Chairman, then we can go all the way over to page 37 at the bottom. We're increasing the loan amounts for the RFA loans, Rural Finance Authority. Section 56, this was from Senator Dill's Senate File 1241. Basically, a 50% increase in the loan amount that farmers will be eligible under that program. So you'll see Section 57, 57, 58, 59, and 60 were all from Senator Dill's Senate File 1241 and increasing those limits. And then, Mr. Chairman, on Section 61, that deals with giving the Farm Lender Mediation Act another 4 years. It would have sunsetted on June 30th of this year without this change. Senator Erickson Ropes had a bill in Senate File 289, and what this does is extends that another 4 years. And then on Section 62, this was, again, a recommendation of the administration working with them last summer. There was a bovine tuberculosis control assessment last year, a one-year assessment of $1 per head to help pay for the bovine TB control program. And what this does is basically clarify who pays and how it's paid. And they're basically administering it this way now, but with this change, this will align the law with kind of current practice. And then you can see, in fact, on page 40, you can see a retroactive effective date for that, basically going back to January 1, 2009, when the assessment started. Section 63 was a committee amendment to Senator Chaudhry. It amends the Environmental Trust Fund Appropriation Act from last session. And what it does is it removes the requirements for planting native ecotypes of the local native ecotypes to Minnesota, preferably of the local ecotype. This was an amendment from Senator Chaudhry to the bill in committee, and it basically eliminates that requirement from the appropriation block for the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund last year. And then that goes through page 41 and 42. And then, Mr. Chairman, section 64 and 65, we've got a couple of deadlines for appointments. The first one is for Senator Vickerman's Feeding Minnesota Task Force. The second one is from Senator Cooley, Senate File 1410, the Noxious Weed Advisory Group. And then we have some repealers in section 66. The first one, 17.49, is an aquaculture report. The repealers in chapter 38, and these, again, the were recommended by the administration. Section 38, there are some certain fare payments that I think, as I understand it, are obsolete. They were recommended by the administration for the repeal of 3802 subdivisions 3 and 4. And then you have a whole number of repealers in chapter 41. This basically eliminates the language for the Family Farm Security Program. This program was created in 1976, and I think we're finally out of that program now after many years, quite a bit of money being spent on that. Over the years. That, again, was from Senate File 1241, Senator Dill. And then on 42.32, you'll see the repeal of 84.02. That's the native species requirements that were put in place in 2007. And that was an amendment to Senator Stump's bill dealing with the grassland, the money for the grasslands in northwestern Minnesota. And that was a Langseth amendment to that bill, and that's also being carried here. And again, that section's effective the day following enactment. And then I'll just quickly go through Article 2. Mr. Chairman, that's basically the $35 million in new bonding authority for the Rural Finance Authority Mr. Mueller mentioned. These are, again, it's a user finance general obligation bonds. It makes this a bonding bill in the sense that it needs to be a House file, but it doesn't need the 60% majority to pass because there is a specific provision in the Constitution for these bonds that's outside of the normal bonding provision in the Constitution that requires the 60%. So it is a bonding bill in that it needs to be a House file, but it doesn't require the 60% majority because these bonds are in here. So that's the $35 million, again, to continue the RFA. And these are user finance. They have been paid back over time when these bonds are issued. So it just gives them some more authority. So that's Articles 1 and 2. And
Mr. Chairman, I can begin Article 3 if you're ready for that.
Certainly, Mr. Bowden.
Article 3 contains the Veterans Affairs Appropriations, and beginning on page 44, you can see the riders there on page 44, line 6. There's $250,000 for the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, which serves homeless veterans. That's taken from Senator Erickson Roep's bill, Senate File 288. Then underneath that, on page 44, line 12, there's some. It's a blank dollar amount now. It'll require an oral amendment to use the number that's from the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chairman, do you want that amendment now?
No, let's have the explanation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's simply for the cost of administration of the GI Bill program. That it's also, of course, related to the statutory appropriation that you'll see in this article as well. Then on page 44, line 15, section 3 contains the Gold Star license plate language. That's taken from Senator Scogin's bill, Senate File 199. That was an amendment in the budget division. There is also a technical amendment for that that'll just clarify exactly how the money is transferred. Section 4 on page 45 is what converts the GI Bill appropriation to an open statutory appropriation for the amount necessary to fund those benefits. Then, beginning on page 45, you have the Military Affairs article. On page 46, line 6, there is a $20,000 appropriation. That rider is taken from Senator Ingebretson's bill, Senate File 625, that it provides a grant to a nonprofit organization to support the morale of deployed service personnel. Then the other items that you see here under enlistment incentives, there's $1,500,000 in the first year. that's taken from the governor's bill. The language underneath that and anything else I haven't described is a riders that have been carried from year to year. That pretty much completes it. I don't know if you're ready for the technical amendment yet, Mr. Chairman, or if you want to.
Well, if we're finished going through the bill, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Vickerman on page 44 with the license plate bill. Did that bill go to transportation? Because I was told that they transportation committee wasn't doing any license plate bills this year. Because I had one.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, that bill was not heard in the Transportation Committee.
Right. Senator Pappas, you picked the wrong division. You should have picked the Ag division.
I should have just put it in the higher ed bill. Yeah.
Apparently.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, a question, and I don't have any problem with what you're doing, but we budgeted $6 million for the GI Bill, but we only use $1 million. What? And I guess the question I have, and like I say, I don't have any problem with you moving it, but what's happening with that? Is it just a lot of people getting out of the service just don't want to use
Mr.
the GI Chair, Bill? Or
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, when we put this together, the federal government was not picking up any of the cost. And now they changed the rule, so they're picking them. So you have to use four or 5 years of the federal money before you even come into the state money. That was the difference. Before, they weren't helping.
Okay.
And Senator Day, to supplement that, I think there was also, with the initiation of the program, like the initiation of any program, some question as to usage, numbers of people, and so on. And that's why what's been done in this bill is to convert the program to an open appropriation so that everybody is covered who would be appropriate. But we don't have unused monies where there's not the need. So it's kind of a solution that, again, protects everyone but protects the budget. Further discussion on the bill. I know we've got some amendments, but Senator Vickerman, is there?
Chair, I have an amendment to get the bill. Do you want to take Senator Anderson's
question? Yeah, Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a question and I have an amendment. So maybe I'll start with the question. I was a little surprised to see an amendment to the LCCMR bill in here, Senator Vickerman. I wasn't aware that was here. And my division has jurisdiction over the LCCMR bill, so I wonder if I should send this bill to my division for review.
Senator Anderson, you want to specify the section
That's
of the bill?
That's on section 63 on page 40. There's been kind of an ongoing debate in the Environment Committee and now I guess in the Ag Committee about when we do restorations, how to protect native species or whether we should worry about protecting native species. And this is some of the same language we've seen in Senator Chaudhry's committee to repeal existing laws about protecting native species. And I'm just a little surprised to see this as an amendment to the LCCMR bill in this bill. I wasn't aware it was in here, and normally LCCMR bills go through the Environment Finance Division. So this is an amendment to the old LCCMR bill.
Okay. Senator Vickerman or Mr. Mueller, Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it was a committee
amendment.
Want
to pick
amendment.
A straw? And,
it was a committee amendment by Senator Chaudhry, and then it went on.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I have to think about maybe I should pull this into my division for discussion.
Well, Senator Vickerman, how do you feel about the section? I mean, would you obviously the bill is still within the Finance Committee, so we don't need a re-referral on the floor or anything. We can simply ask Senator Anderson to take a look at it. What's your thought?
Mr. Chair, we could take that out of the bill because I would like to get this bill to the governor's desk as fast as we can get there. So wherever it is, Senator, we can take that out of there.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would prefer that, and I to keep your bill moving ahead. And obviously, you know, this repealer is in the bill too, and that's, and it's probably, I think it's in the environment omnibus bill, and there's lots of other places this can be worked on, and it will obviously move forward, but I'd like to take out the LCCMR section. So I would move to delete section 63.
Senator Betzel?
Just as a procedural matter, Mr. Chair, there's going to be a built-in delay anyway because this bill has to be a House file. So, I mean, we can take the bill up. I think the plan is to take the bill up to the floor in the Senate as early as tomorrow, but it's going to have to be laid over waiting for the companion bill to come over. So,
I mean, because of the bonding section?
Yes.
Senator Vickerman, it's your bill. Now, you've suggested you would have no objection, but again.
Mr. Chair, I work very closely with Senator Anderson. We serve on the LCCMR. If you want to take it out, we can take it out.
I made the motion, Mr. Chair.
And does that include the repealer as well?
No, I don't think that's – I mean, I'd like to take that out, but that's repealer. Not as directive an issue.
Your amendment is to – can you restate the amendment
section
then?
Section 63 of the bill.
Okay. We have Senator Anderson's motion in front of us. We've heard from Senator Vickerman. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
If not, Senator Olson.
I'm not sure I understand what you meant by the repealer.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's also a repealer in here that is that's the same as Senator Stump's bill that we discussed in the Environment Committee that repeals the existing law on defining what native prairie restorations are. And
so Mr.
Not
Chairman,
taking that out with my amendment. I'm just taking out the part that changes the LCCMR bill that's already been passed. I don't think that's appropriately in this bill.
Oh, so, Mr. Chairman, this doesn't change the law, which changes it, but the requirement that LCCMR projects have to use this rather constraining source and high-cost source of seed. I think, there was a pretty strong case made in Environment Committee that there ought to be some more flexibility, that in some cases there may not even be seed available that is raised within 25 miles, and that was too restrictive, that the larger ecotype and particularly the condition of the soils and the moisture levels were more important to retaining the native prairie plants that could thrive in that area, and it had less to do with how many miles it was from the thing. So I'm sorry that you insisted that had to be a restriction in LCCMR, because I think it actually limits the ability to establish native prairies, and that's what the ultimate goal is.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I would concur with Senator Anderson's amendment to take this part that pertains to LCCMR, Environmental Trust Fund, out of the bill. I also concur with some of what Senator Olson said, but this discussion is going to take place in other formats, in other bills, and it'll be a pitched argument between us and the other body as we try to craft something that protects the purity of our native seeds, but also provide some flexibility and economic sense in reseeding prairies.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
Senator Fredrickson said it very well. This doesn't belong in here, and we shouldn't be rewriting LCCMR bills in this budget. Obviously, I think this language does need some work, and that discussion is going on in the LCCMR. It'll go on in the environment committees, et cetera, but I just don't think we should be doing that in this bill, that we should be changing the LCCMR law.
Mr. Chair, I support Senator Anderson's motion to strike those pages.
Okay. All right, we have Senator Anderson's amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Are there further amendments to the bill? Senator Vickerman, you've got...
another amendment. It should be passed out.
Which amendment, sir?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if anybody has it yet, but what it really does is that...
Which amendment?
What's the number?
It's Mr. Chairman, it's an amendment that extends the expiration date of the... Veterans Campus representative. I think Mr. Watson has it.
And Mr. Chairman, as it's being passed out, note that the
document number is written in invisible ink. This is the A4 amendment. It's just not printed on.
Just part of the Senate budget cutting process this year. All right, Senator Vickerman.
Well, Mr. Chair, all it really does that's extension of the Veterans Campus Representative Program for 2 years. This program would sunset in 2011, and if we don't extend the date, just instead of it quitting in 2011, it goes on to 2013.
Okay, so extends it to the end of the out years. Everybody have the amendment? So it's titled the TSB RDR amendment.
What's expiring?
The program does.
Andy.
There you go. Don't worry, be happy. Oh, the plates. Okay.
Senator Pappas? Or?
I was just trying to understand what's expiring. I didn't hear the explanation. Is this the GI Bill?
No. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, this is an extension of the Veterans Campus Representative Program.
The campus counselors. Okay.
Right. Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, it would end in 2011, so we wanted to put it out 2 more years.
Okay.
So Mr. Chairman. Chair
Olson.
Mr. Chairman, it's tagged on at the end of the Gold Star license plate. Is it just a... It's entirely new section. Okay, thank you.
Okay, further discussion on the amendment? If not, all's in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Rickman, do you have other amendments?
Mr. Chairman, there is the A5 technical amendment. Okay. Mr. Watson has that.
All right.
It's okay. You explain it to
me. Mr. Chairman, I can give you an explanation of that if you want it while it's passed out.
Yeah, let's just wait a second.
It's a funny place. Who used to say that? No.
Mr. Chairman, what this amendment does is it changes the Gold Star license plate language slightly to clarify how the transfer would operate. It authorizes the Commissioner of Finance to transfer money that's in the Veterans Affairs portion of the Support Our Troops account to the Driver and Vehicle Services account, where there's a statutory appropriation provided for the cost of production of license plates. And it requires pre-agreement between the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs and the Commissioner of Public Safety before the transfer is effected. And then what you see in the Section 4 there basically just authorizes use of the money in the Support Our Troops account for those transfers. There is one, and then on line 17, there's clarification provided for a couple of the appropriations, just to confirm that they're one-time appropriations. There is one other item that is missing. Actually, there are two. There's the blank dollar amount provided for the cost of administration for the GI Bill program, and you could incorporate that in this amendment. That's on page 44, line 12, and Mr. Mueller can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's $100,000 that would need to be inserted there. And then one thing that got left off the Gold Star Plate amendment on page 45, section 5 can be deleted because that's picked up in the new language provided in the amendment. So those are two oral changes that could be incorporated in the technical amendment.
Okay. Senator Pariseau.
Before we vote on it, we have the title of the Commissioner of Finance. We probably should change that to Management and Budget. No. Since didn't we pass that out of here already?
Well, it's...
The Management and Budget change?
At this point, it's not law.
But the revisor will change.
All right. Mr. Watson points out the revisor will make that change as the bill proceeds.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Frederickson.
One quick question about the Gold Star plate. Is there an estimate of how many of those plates would be sold or utilized?
That's a good idea. Because the acronym
would be that's right.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, the information I'm getting from Veterans Affairs is about 1,000.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, further discussion on the A5 amendment.
Aye.
If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A2 amendment. you. Mr. Chair, can I speak to this? I mean, Mr. Chair, this is, I guess the decision has been made by a higher power than me that we'll put all the clean water legacy dollars into one bill. And so all this bill, this amendment does is move the clean water programs recommended by Senator Vickerman out of his bill, and then we'll be putting them into the water, the clean water legacy bill that we'll assemble in my division with, along with Senator Vickerman, who's a member of my division. I think that's why this just...
Senator Vickerman, is that your understanding?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. We're just making this bill better every time.
Well, this was...
We'd like to cooperate.
This was not a late decision, but a more recent decision that we would try to consolidate the amendment appropriations in as few places as possible. So within Senator Anderson's division, we'll have the clean water section, the habitat section, and the park section, which you're going to have is, what, three separate bills? Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Chair, there are three separate bills now, but then they'll be merged into one bill when they pass out of my division.
And then we're going to have a separate bill out of Senator Tomassoni's division, which will be the arts culture piece. So if we all understand that. So we have Senator Anderson's A2 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? And again, for members who are concerned about these provisions, the assumption is that these exact provisions will be within our clean water bill, correct?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's my assumption. We need to review them in our division, and I presume my division will agree with the Ag Division's recommendations.
Okay. All right.
And support them. Mm-hmm.
We have Senator Anderson's amendment in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments to the bill? Senator Pappas.
I had to step out for a minute, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure you took care of this appropriation on 44.12.
Yes.
For $100,000, okay.
Yes.
It was $100,000 a year.
Right. Yep. Senator Roblin.
I just have an inquiry. We have a provision in here that's going to pay people who had hail damage for some reimbursement of fees that they had paid and were apparently unable to use. But I'm wondering about the precedent of that and whether we've ever done anything like it before and what we might be setting ourselves up for in the future. I mean, I don't want the state to become a quasi-insurance program for things like that. You know, many of us have had hail damage. 2 years ago, we had a pumpkin crop that we were going to sell at the local farmers market that was extensively damaged by hail. That, you know, the holes made the pumpkins rot. We didn't get any pumpkins to sell. You know, I don't know that it's appropriate to come to the state and ask for coverage for that. And I'm wondering, it's a small amount of money, but it's a precedent. And I am just concerned about the precedent. And I'm wondering why we're doing it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I feel very strongly about supporting this because it worked into the feed the homeless. I wanted to take the extra food that they don't sell at those farmers markets, work with Hmong people or wherever else does it, and use that food for food shelves. Otherwise, it could go to waste.
What she's talking about?
It's not a lot of money. And I'm not so sure I'll take a guess at it, but I think those $500 to $1,000 for one of those tables at the farmers market. And it's one time. It's very important, I think, to those people giving some help. And I understand what you say, but
$20,000 or something.
It's a program I like, and I think it has merit. We can watch and see if it goes further. But see, there's no way you could get in any kind of insurance. I farm, or my son does. He insures everything. There's no way you can do that for
on page 11?
Mr. Chairman?
Small operation, I don't think, and I might be wrong.
Mr. Chairman?
I don't think so.
Senator Olson.
Are you, Senator Vickerman, are you talking about the same thing that Senator Roebling is?
About the hail.
That hail damaged us. Yeah, we're on the same track.
Okay, further questions, amendments? Oh, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question, too. On page 9 and 10, you have a milk purchase program, and I was just wondering, Senator Vickerman, is that fluid milk, or does that include, like, milk and milk products, like cheese?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, this is fluid milk.
Okay.
Further questions or amendments on the
Mr.
bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
I have the A6 amendment. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to explain it while it's being passed out?
Well, let's at least get it around the table as best we can.
Sure, you give one to Senator Vickerman.
She's not as good as that.
Okay, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, we'd brought up this a little bit earlier about with the GI Bill being an open appropriation. I had some concerns about it not having a cap. But we don't want to have to book the $6 million a year. So if we just say that we put a cap on it in the out years, 2013. But it's still very generous. So we're at the existing. Okay, thank you, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a good amendment. It gives us some comfort.
Yeah.
Okay, we have the A6 amendment in front of us as moved by Senator Pappas. Is there further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion or amendments? If not, Senator Vickerman moves that Senate File 1779 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion on Senator Vickerman's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Vickerman and staff. Okay, then we have Senator Pappas. Hey, thank you, Senator Vickerman. I tell you what, why don't we, I'm sure people from the Ag and Vets communities would be interested in higher ed, but if not, let's give people a chance to leave the room.
I think Mr. Albrecht is making copies of an amendment or something that we realized was missing, but he should be here soon.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I did want Mr. Albrecht to go over the fiscal sheet, so maybe I'll go over the bill first, and then.
Well, is there somebody else who can?
Is he just
running copies?
Well, it was. I discovered that we didn't have copies of an amendment, so.
Okay.
Ms. Ryan went to make sure that we got the copy. Doesn't seem to be in the room right now. That's okay. I can do it. When he comes, then we can take over. Mr. Chairman, members, if you want to look at the fiscal sheet. Here he comes. He's going to take over your role.
Chair. He was just
copies of that?
He was just telling me about that. So
he has some of them.
If you're going to do it, it's probably going to do it with the Finance Committee because it's going to be my area. I have my little chunk of it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, are we starting with Mr. Albrecht or?
Mr. Chairman, before we start, I did have some comments I wanted to make, and for some reason my notes have disappeared.
gives it a small piece of history. Like Ross Kramer.
Right on top.
Sandy.
All right. This is memory. Mr. Chairman, I had several goals with the higher ed bill, and for some reason, my notes with my goals have disappeared. They were on top of my stuff. So let me just talk briefly about what I can do from memory, and we'll have to. Did you find them? Isn't she good? Where were they? Hiding. Thank you. We were asked to do a 7% cut across the board, which we have done, but we were fortunate enough to get federal stimulus money. So in this biennium, the higher ed budget is cut 3%, but in the next biennium, there will be a 7% base cut. Our goals are to protect financial aid programs for students. So we keep the federal Pell Grant increase in the financial aid system, in the state grant system. We want to provide predictability for planning for our higher ed institutions. So we balance for 4 years, and we tell them that their cut in the next biennium will be 7%. We want to use the federal dollars wisely. So we're asking the systems to mitigate tuition increases with their federal dollars and to use that money to transition to the 7% base cuts in the next biennium. And we want to do reform. We want to do research-based reform. So we've taken some existing programs that we have, and we focus them more on a reform agenda. We allow students to use some of the state grant money to pay for a summer bridge program, which tells us, research tells us, will better prepare them for college, and we won't use up their state grant for remedial programs during the school year. And we ask the program to be evaluated. We take the Achieve Scholarship Program, which has been a merit scholarship program, and we focus it more on both need and merit, because the research tells us that low-income, high-achieving students attend college at the same rate as high-income, low-achieving students. So we want to bring up the high-achieving students who are low-income, we want to bring their college attendance rate up to the same rate as the high-income, low-achieving or high-achieving students. So we are saying that students who get a B minus in high school and attend college right after high school, right now the Pell Grant and the state grant covers their cost of tuition. With this Achieve scholarship, we're going to cover their cost of attendance, because the research also tells us that these low-income students just don't think there's any way they can go to college because they can't afford it. So we're basically taking that away. And finally, we are using our existing programs that we're funding for advising and counseling service and the Intervention for College Access programs. We're extending their grants for 2 years at the same level of funding and asking for evaluation so we can determine the efficacy of the programs, and also asking for information on how we can bring those programs to scale. So we, again, our goal is to get more students into college. So with that, I'll just turn it over to Mr. Albrecht, who will walk us through the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair and members, the spreadsheet you'll notice across the top has letters on the columns, and columns G and H show you the amount of the governor's changes and the percentage of the governor's changes. And what I'll be going through are columns O and P, which show you the same information that's included in the Senate proposal that you're considering. Beginning with line 12, that's the administrative reduction for the Office of Higher Education. And it's a $532,000 reduction in the Senate's plan. The only difference with the governor is that the Senate would allow the agency the flexibility to allocate that among all of their administrative activities, and the governor chooses which ones should be allocated. On lines 17 and 18 are changes to the Campus Compact Program, and all of the funding for that program is eliminated. On lines 32 to 36 are the changes that the Senate makes in the state grant program, and those are to increase the living and miscellaneous expense allowance, $247. The cost for that is $14.5 million approximately. We decrease the assigned family responsibility by 3%, and the cost for that is $7,951,000. We increase what the amount of tuition that's used in determining your state grant for a two-year program by $1,100, and the cost for that is $9.969 million. And we also do the same with the four-year tuition cap, and the cost of that is $26.427 million. And on line 36 is the one-time summer grant for the high school to college transition program that Senator Pappas mentioned, and the cost for that is $4.877 million. And you can see on line 38, because there's a zero in column O, that all of the money that was made available in the state grant program through the increase in the federal Pell Grant has been allocated within the state grant program. On line 42 shows a Senate reduction of $6.871 million in the Achieve Scholarship Program, and that is the amount of money that is available to use, one, for the line item right below it, the advising and counseling grants, and the remaining $2.871 million is used elsewhere in the jurisdiction. On lines 50 and 51, were amounts that were appropriated in 2007 to the two systems in the state to expand access to rigorous high school programs, and that funding is not continued. On line 52 is the Midwest Higher Education Compact. The state's dues to belong to the compact are increasing by $5,000 a year. On line 53 is the United Family Practice. That is to fund medical residents at United Hospital. And the reduction to that is $63,000 or 7%. Line 54 is the interstate tuition reciprocity. That's being increased by $2 million to meet obligations, primarily from an increase in the obligation to North Dakota. On line 56 is the Learning Network of Minnesota. That is reduced by $530,000. On line 55, going back up, is the Minnesota College Savings Program. It's reduced $640,000, but still at the level that it's funded, $700,000 a year, that's enough money to meet all of the anticipated demand for that program. Line 57 is the Minitex, and line 58 is the MinLink Gateway. Those used to be separate appropriations, but the Senate has decided to combine them and reduce them, and the total reduction is $622,000 or a 6% reduction. So line 61 shows the overall totals for the Office of Higher Education. Under the Senate's proposal, it's a $4.528 million reduction, or a 1% reduction overall. Going on to page 2, lines 65 and 66 are the two appropriations to the Mayo Foundation for medical programs. They are each reduced 7%. The one for the medical school is $92,000, and the one on line 66 for Mayo Family and Residency is $94,000. On line 71 is the reduction for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. It's $103.894 million, or an 8% reduction. On line 74 is a proposal to allocate $100,000 in one-time money to the Institute for Renewable Energy Technology Initiative, I believe. I believe that's at the Mankato State University. On line 77 shows the net result of that, which is a $103.794 million reduction. Line 78 shows the allocation of the federal fiscal stabilization dollars, $60.062 million in the Senate's approach, for a net reduction on line 79 of $43.732 million for MinSCU. Next is the University of Minnesota. On line 84 is the reduction to their operations and maintenance appropriation. That's $111.424 million. On line 89 is the UMail partnership. The reduction there is $1 million for the biennium, a 6% reduction. On line 90 is a family residency program at St. Cloud Hospital. That's reduced $48,000. And the net result of all of that is on line 101, a net reduction of $112.472 million, or 8%. And then on line 103 shows the allocation of the federal fiscal stabilization money to the University of Minnesota, $57.663 million, for a net change for the University of Minnesota of $54.809 million, or 4%. And finally, on line 113 shows the overall number for the budget jurisdiction. For the Senate, a reduction of $220.980 million, or 7%. And line 117 shows the effect after allocating the federal dollars of $103.145 million reduction, or 3%. Mr. Chair, I skipped over a couple of things. On line 108 is an appropriation to the Board of Dentistry from the State Government Special Revenue Fund. That's for Article 3 of our bill, which contains language for oral health practitioners. And this is the money, I guess, for the licensing program. And then on line 111 is an appropriation to the Department of Health. It shows as zero in 10 and 11. The money is being established in the base going forward for 2012 and 13 to conduct an evaluation of the program.
Okay. Whoever's chairing? Madam Chair?
I am.
Thanks. Madam Chair, then if we want to look at the bill, I'll just, let's start on page 3, because we're going to look more at the language. This is the part of the state grant section that sets the tuition maximums within the state grant program and the living and miscellaneous expense allowance. on 315, we're saying that up to $75,000 of this appropriation is used for computer programming that would allow the state grant to be used for the Summer Bridge Program, which is on page 27. Line 320 through 25 is a Senator Clark provision that requires that all the federal Pell Grant money remain in the state grant program, which we have done. Subdivision 3 on 3.26 is an ongoing program, Safety Officer Survival. On page 4, subdivision 4 and 5, the state child care grants and the state work study grants are not cut. On 4.3, this is the Achieve Scholarship Program, where we are using some existing dollars for advising and counseling grants, and those continue. And we are also giving priority to the existing program so that we will eventually have 4 years of data and be able to do a better analysis of the programs. On page 5, the 5.7 and 5.9, this is the base funding in the future for the Achieve program. We have a new program in our division, 5.10, which is the Indian Scholarship Program. It used to be in K-12 division. It was transferred to us with the money, so now we're carrying that scholarship program. There's been no cuts there. The TEACH program on subdivision 8 is for child care teacher scholarships, so we did not cut that. The Intervention for College Attendance program are grants that go out all over the state, and again, to provide continuity in services and to have better ability to analyze the programs, we're asking the office to give priority to the previous grantees, you know, assuming they're doing good. We also want to ask them on 6.21, 6.24 to advise us on how we might bring these programs to scale, because they're small funding, there are lots of little programs, they impact, you know, a dozen or 20 students. We would like to be impacting much larger numbers of students, and I'm going to have an amendment on that. He talked about the Midwest Higher Education Compact and United Family Practice. Interstate tuition reciprocity, we do have an increased payment we have to make to North Dakota because we have more students going to North Dakota than are coming to Minnesota, and this is the incremental cost that we have to pay to the state of North Dakota, even though they have oil money and have more money than we do. We mentioned these other programs were on the spreadsheet. There's no important riders there. Administration money for the Achieve program on 7.24. We have boilerplate language on balance forward and transfers. We allow the Office of Higher Education to carry over from 1 year in the biennium to the next and also to move between programs. If they should run into a deficit in one program and a surplus in another program. Then section 4 on the bottom of 8 is the Minsky section. We're on page 9. We're continued funding for the colleges that went to resident-only tuition. 9.23 is the appropriation, as Mr. Albrecht mentioned, to the IRETI. On number 4, because we're reducing the Minsky appropriation by 8%, some institutional priority allocations that we've required in the past were, and we'll have an amendment on this, we're allowing Minsky to evaluate whether they want to continue to fund those legislative requests. The
Mr. Chairman.
Page 10.19.
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Senator Pappas, on that provision, doesn't the board, Minsky board, couldn't they do that right now without that authority?
Senator Pappas.
Certainly they could do the base appropriation. But if we continue to say that this is a, and you'll see language later in the bill, that they must fund these, whatever it is, 5 different entities, then they're really obligated to fund those. So what we're saying is that they can evaluate whether they want to continue funding them or not. And I think there was a lot of misunderstanding about the farm and small business programs, is that they still have their base funding. We're only talking about a specific appropriation in the 2005 legislative session. It was, I don't remember how much, $180,000 or something like that, that they ended up getting. So that's the part that we're saying we're no longer going to say you must fund this. If you want to continue funding it, if it's consistent with your mission and goals, and, you know, then by all means continue doing it.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I'm just wondering, how did the committee arrive at those particular programs versus, let's say, cosmetology or nursing or, you know, some other program?
They were, Madam Chair and Senator Stump, they were legislatively directed in 2005 to fund these particular initiatives. They had actually, had been Minscu initiatives, some were governor's initiatives, some were legislative initiatives. So that's only because that we specified in a rider that these particular programs had to be funded.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, the farm and small business programs have been around for decades.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, that's right. And the base program, this is not the base program. This is what's called institutional priority allocations on line 9.31. And we'll add an amendment to clarify that some more. Institutional priority allocations are on what they call the green sheet. And it was for this very small appropriation in 2005. But we don't do anything to the base program that continues funding.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I'm not sure I quite understand. If they had base funding, what was this 2005? I don't recall what those priority allocations were. You just added some additional money?
Yes, we added some additional money.
They had to spend there?
Right. We added some additional money, and... it's kind of like, okay, we're cutting your budget. How much are we still going to tell you have to fund these certain things? And, you know, we may come up with new priorities like we did with the Mankato thing. But we think that it's only fair to say to Minscu, you know, you have to figure out where you're going to cut.
Well, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, if you haven't priority allocated in this bill, they wouldn't be having additional money beyond their base funding. So it would appear that you're just raising the issue of whether these programs fit the mission. And I don't know what that mission is. Is it all related to degree programs? Or, I mean, if you're thinking of, just for instance, the Farm and Small Business Program isn't really a degree program, but is one that has been, more of an outreach that's
right.
been around for, many decades.
Well,
that has been very, very effective. It used to be tied with the high school ag programs, and then when the technical schools were part of the local school district, that was a part of it. But with a merger, it somehow got moved into Minscu, rather than, say, the university, which might have made some sense of, you know, with their requirement that they have outreach.
Well, and Madam Chair and Senator Olson, in this case, this was a Minscu initiative that they were planning to do, whether we told them to do it or not. So it is part of their mission because they don't just have degree programs. They have certificate programs. They have diploma programs. They have customized training with the two-year colleges. So they have very broad mission.
So, Mr. Chairman, that isn't questioning whether that's consistent with their mission.
From our perspective, we're just changing a must to a may. And we'll see language like that later in the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, are there other programs that we funded in 05 in the same or similar manner as we did these, kind of the add-on for these five or six programs? 8, 10, however many it was.
There may have been, I don't remember. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, these are the only ones that we remember that we did. I don't know if there are others or not.
Well,
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, maybe Senator Pappas, maybe you can find out, because
And I think you can tell from the discussion here that, you know, a lot of people in especially in greater Minnesota, have always relied on a lot of these categories that you have plugged in here to, you know, provide decent employees for a lot of different, not only in agriculture, but other areas as well. And, you know, with the changes in education that, and some of them that Senator Olson mentioned over the, you know, past, 15, 18 years that I've been here, in greater Minnesota, we've lost a lot of those farm programs, a lot of the VOAG type of programs, whether it would be a, you know, a farming program, a strictly farming program, or you know, a welding program, or whatever it may be that gives a lot of our kids out in greater Minnesota some training so that they can become employed. And, you know, they depend on these programs, and we've seen them go away over the years. It used to be in high schools in greater Minnesota, just about every high school had some sort of industrial arts program. And many of us around this table learned how to weld and do woodwork and things like that that helped, you know, further our careers. And those opportunities aren't there for our kids anymore. And when we do have, you know, when things get narrowed down, you know how it is. And we only have a few of these programs left. Well, you can see we're going to defend them right down to the end. So if you could just find out, you know, what the 05, if there was other programs that need to be on this list, and then kind of figure out the language so that, you know, our farm VOAG people are not ready to leap off the edge of the cliff.
Yeah, I understand, Madam Chair and Senator Murphy. And as I mentioned before, we're only talking about the institutional priority allocations. We're not talking about the base program. So that was the little increase that they got in 2005.
Right. And Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, but, you know, once again, you know, taking in the historic perspective of these programs and the declining funding that they've had over the years, because so many of the programs were closed. I'm not saying that the institutions that still provide the education are reducing their funding to those programs. They're not. It's just that the programs have dried up and gone away. The ones that we have, we want to keep them. We want to keep them healthy. And that's what all of this activity is about. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I'm still trying to understand what was done in 2005 with the priority allocation. Was there special funding that was ongoing that committed us on through it? Because your language, and I've already incorporated your amendment in the language on page 10, that if they determine that it doesn't advance the mission and priorities, then the board may discontinue a priority allocation and reallocate the funding. I mean, is so it was that money was going to continue through this year no matter what, or is it, you previously had that they could actually discontinue the program, but you're saying they can't take the program out now, but they can the priority allocation is still going to be money that comes to them, but they don't have to spend it there?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson,
Pappas.
The money is ongoing in their base. So, yes, they would not have to spend it there. And you know what, members, I just think we're spending too much time on this. So if you would like me to take out line 9.35 totally, we can do that. You know, if that would give people more comfort to just do that. I don't want people to feel like I'm attacking these programs. Because that's not my intention.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, that is one that we focused on, but I'm not so sure that we may not feel some the same way. Senator Tomasoni may have some concern about 10.6 and 7. I think 10.1 and the Centers of Excellence was a great initiative. So, I mean, why would we just take one and not?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I mean, they're all our babies, and we think they're all important, and we want to keep them all. But we're cutting the base 8%,
And Minsky is going to, Minsky is going to have to make some choices about, are they going to eliminate programs or are they going to cut programs? You know, and so we're just not, we're trying to make their, let them do their job, basically, and not have the legislature tell them so much what they should do. And if they feel like these programs are all still consistent with their mission and you know, are important to do, if the board and the chancellor feels like centers of excellence are important to do, they'll continue doing them. Madam Chair, I'm going to move on then. On page 10, line 1019, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, this is the appropriation for Minsky. And we're asking that the first priority be mitigating the need to raise tuition and fees for Minnesota resident students. And the rest of the language is from the federal law.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas. I was looking at the language on page 10 from lines 25 to 31. And it seems to me that there's a very fine line between what these funds can be used for and those that they cannot. For example, what's the difference between modernization, renovation, or repair of facilities that are used primarily for instruction?
Senator Pappas.
But not be used for maintenance of systems, equipment, or facilities. What's the difference between modernization, repair, and repair, but not systems, equipment, or facilities?
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, and Senator Pappas, and Senator Fredrickson, this language is taken from the federal law, and quite frankly, nobody knows what the distinction between those terms is, but like it is from the federal law.
Madam Chair, now I understand it's the same instruction we got for deciding what's green infrastructure with the environmental part of this law. Thank you.
Senator Fredrickson, I guess when we include this kind of language in our bills, we're just giving comfort to the federal government that we're following their directions.
Muddled as they may be.
And, exactly. Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, you'll see this language again in the University of Minnesota section. Then I wanted to point out on page 11, line 12 and 13, that the Board of Trustees has to submit a plan to the Office of Higher Education and the legislature over how they're going to spend the federal dollars. On page 12, line 12-3, the federal government does require us to spend some money in 2009 based on, you know, their formula. And so that is an appropriation in 2009. Let's see, any more? Okay, then we start the University of Minnesota, and we talked about the dollars. So on 12.28 is the federal money again, and that has that same language on the top of 13. And also the plan language is on 13.23 and 13.24 and a few lines beyond. On page 14, this is the required appropriation, again, in 2009 from the federal dollars. In the specials, the specials were cut, I think, in 2003, and those cuts were never restored. So I'm not recommending any cuts to the specials. And, of course, those are very important to a lot of us, and they're legislative priorities. Page 17, 17.5, 17.11, and there will be an amendment here. This is asking that in the future, if there are unallotments and the university decides it needs to unallot dollars to the Mayo Partnership, Mayo University of Minnesota Partnership, make sure all parties are consulted. And so that's going to be slightly amended. We talked about the dollars being reduced 7% to the medical school and the Mayo family residency consistent with other family residency programs. Section 7, 8, and 8 is the appropriation Mr. Albrecht mentioned to the Board of Dentistry and the Department of Health. On the top of page 19, came over from the other body during the last conference committee that we should have a strict credit limit of 60 and 120 credits. Oh, I didn't mention that. I think Mr. Albrecht mentioned that, though. There is a waiver process in place, but we're not so sure that was such a great idea to put those credit limits in. It's creating some confusion on campus, and especially Senator Dill had a proposal that we should be more flexible in terms of the Associate of Science degree. So we thought for purposes of, you know, we can have further discussion on this, but we thought we would just eliminate it for now. Article 2, this is a Senator provision that came to us from Judiciary, but it had to do with the University of Minnesota investment practices, that they could keep some of that information as private data. On Section 2, on line 20, 2025 and 2026, we found this strange provision in law for the PSEO programs that they weren't allowed to advertise or recruit based on financial grounds, and so we just stricken that language. Page 2032 begins the Minnesota P20 Educational Partnership proposal by Senator Wieger, and he's actually going to have an amendment on that. It's an existing partnership, but we're now putting it in statute and adding legislators, which will send this bill to Rules Committee. Section 4 on page 2210 is Senator Latt's provision that Senator Vickerman will like, which is for Minsky to develop and the Board of Regents to develop a system to evaluate learning that goes on during military service, that they can then give award credits or develop some kind of course equivalency so that our veterans can get credit for some of their military service. Section 5 is also a LATS provision that students who begin a course of study are informed if at the end of this course of study they have to get a license, and if that they have some kind of, if they have a felony conviction in their past that will prevent them from being licensed, that they're told in the beginning that this could be a problem, and also on their ability to get federal aid. Section 6 is a voter issue that institutions in Minsky are going to provide to the Secretary of State a list of students that are in residency halls that will help facilitate their ability to register and vote on Election Day. Section 7 is from Senator Roebling's bill for the Office of Higher Education that eliminates some unnecessary language on the top of page 24. Section 8 is the, as I mentioned, the high school to college, the summer bridge program language that establishes that program. On the top of page 26 is a technical correction, section 9, and section 10 is also, I think, from the Office of Higher Education. I think both these provisions are technical corrections. Section 11, it has to do with the state grant, and this for some reason is in statute as opposed to rider, but it reduces the percentage of assigned family responsibility. So it actually, this section will help independent students and I think part-time students as well. And it also applies to everyone. Section 12 is what we're calling the Minnesota Promise. And this is actually, I think students don't realize this, but this is current law that if you are a Pell Grant eligible student, a low-income student, that you will receive enough money from the Pell Grant and the state grant to cover your tuition and fees at a two-year college. And so we would like that information to be promoted more by the Office of Higher Education and others. So it goes back to, again, students feeling like they can't afford college and not realizing that between the Pell Grant and the state grant, their tuition fees are actually covered. The Section 13 is the one-time grant for the Summer Bridge Program again. Section 14
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We're here.
Senator Stump, I'm having a hard time seeing you down there.
Yeah,
so I'm sorry.
I'll wave my hand. Thank you. Senator Pappas, on that program, on the Summer Bridge Program, is that just for seniors that are going to go into either college or a post-secondary institution?
Madam Chair, Senator Grant, yes. Senator Stump, yes.
And on the spreadsheet, and I, you know, rather than jump back to that a little bit later, we have a program, college and the high school program,
yes.
And was that eliminated, or was the funding for that eliminated on the? And I'm not sure the exact component, but we funded it in the E12 education bill,
right?
But there's a counterpart in your proposal,
Madam Chair, Senator Stump. We had, I believe this came back from conference committee, we had an appropriation for Minsky and the University of Minnesota to promote more college in the schools in rural Minnesota. And we got information back that it wasn't very well utilized. So we've just kind of transferred that to Minsky and to you. They already do it, basically.
The college and the school program is utilized quite a bit, but
this appropriation was not.
Oh, okay.
This particular appropriation.
Maybe we can visit a little bit more about that, because I think it's a very effective program for high schools.
Absolutely.
Across the
I'm
state.
Strong supporter of the program.
And it's got good support from school districts, because the students actually stay in the school versus, let's say, PSEO, where they're, you know, leaving the school. So I think, at least from the E12 committee, the feeling was to try to promote that as much
yes.
as possible versus, you know, some of the other programs. I mean, we have AP and IB and a number of those that are underutilizing the appropriation in the E12 budget, but the one with the college and the school is growing, and I think that's been very effective. So.
Mr. Albrecht remembers more about this than
yeah, Madam
I
Chair,
do.
To that point.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas and Senator Stump, the funding for college and the school is what we're calling college and the schools that's showing up on our spreadsheet and in the higher ed division grew out of the governor's a proposal in 2007 for the Achieve Scholarship Program, which was targeted to students who complete a rigorous program in high school. And there was concern among some members that access was limited, particularly in rural Minnesota, to those mm-hmm. types of rigorous programs and rigorous courses that make up the program. So the funding that was in the higher education bill was included for both systems, the University of Minnesota and Minsky, to do more to enhance access to rigorous courses in rural Minnesota. And the information that came back to the legislature about how that money was used led to the conclusion that it wasn't used very effectively.
Well, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, the college and the schools uses existing faculty in the high schools to teach the programs, but obviously they have to be adequately credentialed, plus the curriculum has to be of a level that is acceptable to the colleges. Now, what were they doing? You would expect that they would be providing some means for both assessing or enhancing the teacher preparation as well as dealing with that curriculum. And if they aren't doing it, is it saying, well, we'd rather not do it there, we would just rather they come to the college so that we get the money rather than doing this at the high school level? I'm puzzled as to what the role of the colleges is and whether they are carrying it out, and what if that's the barrier to not having it, is if it's not accessible, it means they're not equipped to deliver it. And it seems to me that that has to be a partnership between the high schools and the colleges in order for that to come about. Because the faculty at the high school, it's not usually the college professors coming in. It is to the high school. It is the credentialing of the teachers or assuring that they that what their credentials are is will be acceptable so that that credit will transfer and be accepted at the college.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson and Mr. Albrecht is going to respond as well. I am a strong supporter of the program. It's nothing to do with the program. It's just this particular appropriation, we just didn't get very good information back about how it was used. We didn't get we didn't feel like it was very well used. So, Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I don't have much more to add other than what Senator Pappas said. I certainly don't claim to understand the inner workings of the college and the schools program. But I do know that whatever the systems were attempting to do with the money that was appropriated to them through our bill in 2007 largely had not been implemented by the time we revisited the appropriation in preparing our bill this year.
Okay. Any other questions?
I mean, we certainly could revisit it in conference committee, but you know, we just weren't getting very good information back about how this money had been utilized. And I think that's a real. We need to be more careful with how we appropriate money. This was a conference committee initiative, and coming from the other body, and it didn't have a lot of accountability attached to it. Okay.
Hey, let's go on then.
Then on section 14 on page 27 is we are requiring any institution that receives a state grant to develop a relationship with at least two high schools in order to promote academic preparation and college attendance. And those have to be high schools that are not making adequate yearly progress. And in that relationship, on the top of page 28, they should do a college readiness assessment, assist students with the FAFSA, and make sure students are visiting a college campus. Theirs, I suppose. The section 15 is something that the Office of Higher Education brought to me that was a kind of a barrier with students who want to apply for the Achieve Scholarship. We do require, we have a foreign language requirement, I think, of 2 years, and most of our four-year colleges have always had a two-year language requirement. But we thought that for students whose first language is not English, really English is their second language, and we want them to be proficient in English. So we're waiving that requirement for them so they can focus on English.
Senator Pappas, mm-hmm. If I can just interrupt you a minute to make an announcement. They're going to check in on the floor and then recess so we can finish. So they will call us if they need us to punch in order to have a quorum. But
okay.
Just don't want members to be getting nervous about getting up and leaving because they're not going to be taking up any bills until we're done. Okay, Senator.
Well, Pappas. Madam Chair, I'll try to go a little quicker. Section 16 on page 28, this is language for the refocusing of the Achieve program to make it more research-based. So it focuses more on the low-income, high-achieving students. So it's both a merit and a need proposal. And then also on section 17 is this is saying that the Achieve dollars are the last dollars in. So they have to be included after all the other aid programs in order to reach the cost of attendance. And the qualification, the cap on that program is the expenses at a four-year MNSCU institution. On section 19, the bottom of 29, we are requiring students to work at least 10 hours a week during the term, so they're also contributing. It's their responsibility to contribute to their education. On page 30, section 20, the existing Achieve program, we're allowing that students who are still in the pipeline or kind of were eligible but missed the application. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. This is section 20 is saying that with the Achieve program, you can renew for up to 4 consecutive years, but you have to have a 3.0 average in order to get renewed. Section 21 is, this is the evaluation report for the Achieve program. Right. section on page 31, section 23 and 22. This is requested. It was in the Roebling governor's bill. It's called the moral obligation. Don't ask me any more about it, but it means they get a better interest rate. Section 24, we also found that research tells us that college planning should begin in seventh grade, so we've moved that from eighth to seventh grade. And on page 32, line 3220, we want the office to include specific information about the Minnesota Promise and the Achieve Scholarship Program. On page 33 and 33-4 on the Minskew board, we are saying that a commissioner may not serve as a member of the board. I think that's really a conflict of interest. And let's see, with the Minskew appointments, what we're saying here in section 26 and 27 and 28 is that the advisory committee that recommends to the governor who should be appointed to the Minskew board, we're asking that they send those recommendations to the legislative committees as well. So we get a sense of who's in the mix, so we can do some comparison to who the governor's recommended to who he's not recommended. On section 3029, this again is taking away some of the must and making it may, and this has to do with the power of you. Continuing section 30, the centers of excellence, we're saying instead of must, may. On section 31, this has to do with this issue that's come before us for years now about Minskew producing excess electricians and there aren't enough jobs for them in the state. So this is coming from the state auditor's report on this issue and telling Minskew they really need to do some labor market assessments and give students information about job placement rates. Section 32 is the Regent Candidate Advisory Council, and we are putting saying that they can't serve for more than two terms. That's 12 years. That seems to be enough time to be on the Regent Advisory Council. And Section 33 is aligning the Regent language with the joint rules. Section 34 is a technical issue from finance about the timing of the payments to the University of Minnesota. Section 35 is tied to that Election Day registration issue I mentioned earlier. Section 36 is the Senator Murphy bill about being able to take this benefit for,
survivors of safety officers.
Who died in action, that they can take their benefit to a reciprocity state. Section 37 is a Senator Vandeveer proposal on aligning human resources systems. Section 38 is Roebling language on textbook information requirements. Section 39 is how we're handling the Achieve Scholarship students who are kind of in the pipeline, that they can continue to be eligible. Section 40, and I have an amendment for this section, is we want to get a handle on evaluating our teacher education programs in the state, because we always have a lot of initiatives about mid-career and alternative licensure, and, you know, let's really take a look at our teacher licensure programs and see, are they doing the job that we want them to do? A lot of people think they are, or do they need some changes? And I have some amended language that I've been working on with the Office of Higher Education. Section 41 are deadlines for appointments to the P20 Partnership Committee, and Section 42 is repealer for some of the no longer operative provisions in the Achieve program. It refers back to page 18. Article 3 is the oral health care practitioners legislation, and what we're doing here is we're really carrying forward the entire bill that authorizes both Minskew and the university to educate these mid-career dental hygienists, oral health practitioners, dental therapists, whatever they're called, and sets in place a licensing provision through, I think, the Office of Dentistry and the Department of Health. And Senator Lynch is here if we have any more questions about that provision. It's been in this bill. It was in this bill last year or 2 years ago. There's been a lot of discussion and debate about this. It is a issue with Minskew and the university, so we felt it was appropriate to have it in this bill. And then, if there are any questions, and we have some amendments.
Are there any questions?
Then, Madam Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Which is in our packet. So
this is in your packet.
This is the higher ed A1, it's called.
So do you want to tell us?
Page 17. This I mentioned earlier that I was going to have an amendment to this provision by Senator Lynch. And this is, I guess there was an issue when there was the legislature reduced appropriations in the past, that there wasn't good communication between the university and the partnership, the people from Mayo. And this is saying that really they need to be consulted before those appropriations are reduced.
This is the A1 that was in the package.
Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of the amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Then, Madam Chair, I have the A4 amendment, and this is what we discussed with the farm and small business programs, and my amendment will just make it clearer that we're only talking about the priority allocations. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called, that the legislature put in law in the 2005 session.
Chief's here too. Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions?
Yes. Is this the A4 amendment, Madam Chair?
The A4, right. A4. Higher ed A4.
I would like to amend that or ask if the author would amend it to take out that one relating provision to the farm business management and the small business.
Okay, I'll just withdraw my amendment, and you can offer a separate amendment.
Seems to be Senator Pappas.
Oh, we need the rest? Oh, okay. How are we going to do that?
If you just include that, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas,
oh, we need the rest for the rest.
Are you withdrawing your amendment or not?
No, I'm not, because we need it for the rest of the provisions. So.
All right. So,
so how do we
Senator know? Higgins.
Madam Chair, the higher ed A1 and the SC higher ed A4
are the same.
Are identical.
Okay, great.
And we passed A1, didn't we?
All right.
A1, you just adopted.
Madam Chair?
All right. We have some numbering issues. The higher ed A1 that we just adopted is page 17, correct?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
No. Just say page 17 anywhere on
Mr.
there.
Mr. Watson.
Madam Chair? There is confusion from two sources. One is that there are two A1s.
Okay. That would cause.
And another is that one of the A1s is identical to the A4. The A1 that is in your packets is the one that's identical to the A4.
Right. And we adopted that.
So Madam Chair?
The amendment that Senator Pappas described as A1 is a different one. That's the one to page 17. That's being passed out now.
Okay.
She explained the one that's the amendment to page 17.
Okay. So I think at this point it would be appropriate to withdraw the A4 amendment, Senator Pappas, since we've already adopted it.
Madam Chair?
No. We adopted the A1.
We adopted the A1 that's identical to the A4.
No. We did the opposite.
No,
one that we actually had, that's the one we were looking at when we adopted it.
We adopted the new A1 that was just passed out.
Why don't we reconsider what we just
All right,
did.
Let's just withdraw all the amendments that have been offered so far. And
Madam
we'll
Chair, having voted on the prevailing side of the A1 amendment, I move to reconsider the A1 amendment, whichever one I voted on.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. All right, Senator Pappas, would you like to start over now?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Now I'll refer to the SCHIGHEREDA1.
And it says page 17, line 5.
Yes. This is the one I described. This is for Senator Lynch.
So is there any discussion of this amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment is adopted. Senator Pappas.
Okay. Now we were dealing with the SC Higher Ed A4 amendment. Senator Stump and I were discussing that we need to modify this to take out the farm and small business programs.
So you only want 6, 7, and 8.
And Madam Chair, I think it would be quite easy just to delete line 9.35.
We could take that as a separate amendment, Senator Stump, or in this case, Council is recommending that we only adopt on the A4 1.6 through 1.8. Is that right?
Yes.
But don't we still want it changes to essential?
And at 1.5.
Well, Mr.
Senator
Madam
Pappas,
Chair.
We're trying to work this out.
Senator Pappas, how would you prefer to do this?
Okay, Senator Stump, I actually would prefer that you amend the A4 amendment to delete 9.35. And actually, I'll incorporate that. How about that? I'll incorporate Senator Stump's proposal to delete 9.35, page 9, line 35.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Pappas, would you incorporate 10.6 and 10.7 also?
There we go.
This will take out the whole thing. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair.
So was that incorporated, Senator Pappas? We couldn't hear you.
Okay. We'll take 10.6, 10.7.
Madam Chair,
Senator Robley.
You know, I guess I kind of disagree that we keep adding more here, especially those that are not statewide. The first one I think is justified because it's statewide. You know, these are very regional, and I think that the board can make decisions as to whether or not they deserve priority allocations or not.
All right. Well, we have the A4 amendment before us, and the author has incorporated other things into it. So you could vote against the amendment, Senator Roebling, or you could divide the amendment, whichever you prefer.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Just to be clear, which did we incorporate now? I wasn't sure if
we incorporated.
Delete 9.35, 10.6, and 10.7.
Northeast.
Okay, we did do that then.
Those
okay.
have all been added as delete to the A4 amendment. So is there any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Now the chair is reverting back to Senator Cohen.
Apparently when I was gone, there was some confusion, so I needed to come back, I guess.
I think we're just about done.
Oh, in that case. Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Ms. Chair, I offer the A2 prefaced with higher ed.
Do we have an A2?
Please pass that.
Mr. Chair, I could speak briefly as it's being distributed.
What number is it?
A2. Higher ed, A2.
It's the A7.
Do you have? Let's wait till Senator Pappas gets a copy of the amendment.
Same.
It's the same.
Okay, it's the same. All right.
Okay, Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, this puts some clarifying language regarding use of best practices for the P20 partnership, and more significantly, it addresses a fiscal note that came out this morning that deletes the reference to the Commissioner of Education at page 22, line 4, and refers to the chair of the partnership. The costs now are absorbed by who is ever the chair, whichever organization chairs the partnership. So that has been circulated, and the practice has been that it's absorbed by who is ever chairing. And that should address the fiscal note.
And I support the amendment. Senator Cohen.
All right, I was checking that with Mr. Mossman. Okay. So, all right, we have Senator Wieger's motion, the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments? Okay. Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, I've got a very technical amendment. Page 25, line 30, there's reports to the legislature on reports of academic performance. It's due December 15 of each year. I think maybe January 15 would be more appropriate because we may have reports sitting around for a while that, you know, haven't been
like
seen until the legislative session starts. And also, coming off an election year, you may not even have the full organization done in time when the reports are being submitted. So I suggested page 25, line 30, change December 15 to January 15.
That's fine. I should have caught that, too. Thank you.
All right. We have Senator Betzold's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
If there's any further discussion, I understand they need us upstairs to at least check in for a few minutes during session. So if these are quick comments, fine. Otherwise, yep. Senator Berglund?
Just a quick comment. This is a pile of reports that my office has received over the last year from the University of Minnesota. And they have saved them because they find it quite amazing that the university has a budget to keep producing this many reports in a year. And so I just wanted to show this to everyone to let you know that there are some ways that the university could reduce their spending without affecting the students.
And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, how many of those did we require?
Oh, I don't know that we required any of them.
Yeah. And, Senator Berglund,
you require some.
How many of those did you read?
I didn't read any of them.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
On that point, I'd like to draw your attention to page 29, section 2. And we have kind of a conflicting policy, I think. You're deleting a part of a sentence there that says, but it may not.
What line is it?
This is on line 20.25 and 20.26.
20.
In the E-12 area, we have a policy that restricts advertising for students and giving out goods or some monetary type reward for recruitment. And I think this kind of conflicts with that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, no, that's not the intention. We actually want students to know that if they enroll in PSEO or a college in the schools and get dual credit, they're actually going to save money for college. This doesn't have anything to do with any kind of, you know, free cups or T-shirts or anything.
But I think you can give financial information, and you always could give financial information. But I don't see where the deletion of this language adds to the policy that I don't think it enhances the higher education policy for recruitment, and I think it conflicts with the E-12 policy that we have.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, when we're trying to get students to do dual enrollment, you know, we really need to be telling them that this is going to help them save tuition. If they're really smart, they could get two full years of college while they're in high school and save an incredible amount of money considering how high our tuition is. So that's the intention. If you want us to work on, you know, being a little bit more specific with this, we're happy to do that. But, you know, we kind of feel this is a higher ed issue. And we understand P16. You know, we cross jurisdiction. But given how expensive college is these days, smart students who are academically prepared to take these dual enrollment classes really should be encouraged to do it. And I know in the beginning of dual enrollment, PSEO, you know, it's controversial. But now that we have college in the schools, it shouldn't be so controversial anymore because you can take those college courses right in your high school.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, I don't think I think what you're focusing on is not may not advertise. I think what we're focusing on is strictly a kind of a recruitment incentive, and I think the higher education systems can certainly do the financial aid, the all of the other information that students would be interested in without having it focused strictly on. So I think it's maybe just an interpretation between a difference between you and I.
I think you're. I think some of the higher ed institutions feel like this does limit them on what they can say to students. So I think we need to come up with a way of, yeah, I think recruit and solicit are particular words. But if we used inform, they could certainly inform them of the financial advantages without recruiting or soliciting. So let's work on some language that we can where we can fix this between now and the floor.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the bill?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, do you want to just finish up quickly? I have the A8 amendment.
Okay. Why don't we just get some?
Okay, and then I think I just have one more. I don't know about members.
Just because they've asked for us upstairs, are there other amendments members want to offer? Senator Fischbach, you had something?
I just have two more, and I brought them up earlier. We have the A8, Mr. Chairman. We can just finish then. This is the whole idea. I just wanted to refine this language of what I'm looking for with this evaluation, that we want the grantee to provide a plan for broadening their services, and then we want the office to do an analysis of what are the most effective programs. I don't know if you've seen this.
Okay. We've got the A8 amendment. Is there further discussion? Does everybody have it? Okay. No discussion. Senator Pappas moves adoption of the A8 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion
then
carries.
Then, Mr. Chairman, on page 40, I had some placeholder language on the teacher evaluation, teacher education issue, and in further work with the Department of with the Office of Higher Education, we've come up with a replacement for Section 40, which isn't quite so expansive, but it gives us, we're starting to look at what are the best practices and innovative teacher education programs.
So we have another amendment?
What?
So is there a...
We have another amendment?
I have amendment? The A9. Is that coming?
Okay. Do we have the A9 amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Now we have a report submitted on June 15th. Now we might still be here this year.
We picked that date, Senator Higgins, because that's my birthday.
Ah, excellent.
Okay, we have Senator Pappas's A9 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments?
We got everything now?
Further discussion on the part of committee members? If not, Senator Pappas moves that the document labeled Higher Education 3715 as amended be introduced by the chairman as a committee bill and be recommended to pass. Further discussion on that motion?
Is this for Senator
Stump?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know who sent us this note. Somebody came up with language for Senator Stump that I wanted him, he could just briefly consider. And that is on page 20, to reinstate the stricken language on line 25 and 26, but then add advertise or otherwise recruit or solicit purchase signatures to enroll in its programs solely on the basis of financial funds. I don't like that. No, it doesn't work for me. Never mind. Let's just pass the bill. We'll work on it.
All right. Then Senator Pappas renews her motion, although the restated that Senator Pappas moves that the document labeled Higher Education 3715 is amended to be introduced by the chair as a committee bill and recommended to pass and re-referred to the Rules Committee. That motion is because there are legislative appointments to the P20 Commission. So on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Pappas.